coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
We're getting ready for Hollywood's biggest night with an Oscar-themed Inside Pop quiz. I'm testing Amita's knowledge, and we'll give a couple of predictions, guaranteed to be right, along the way.
Then, is it too late now to say sorry? Too late to apologize? It seems like sorry isn't the hardest word, and with the recent influx of celebrities saying sorry, we discuss when an apology works, and in this current environment, why it may be time to rethink those apologies.
All of that, and of course, the big sell. It's all happening right now on Inside Pop. Hey there, I am Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel, and this is Inside Pop, your deep dive inside the world of pop culture.
We've got such a great show for you, Oscars, current trends in celebrity apologies. But first, just a quick note that if you are a fan of the show, if you're listening, as you're listening, why don't you head over to your to whatever you're listening on, whether it be Apple Podcasts or Overcast or Stitcher, and give us a quick rating and review. That helps us to rise in whatever algorithms are happening, and it helps us to reach other listeners who will enjoy us as much as you're doing right now. So take a quick minute and do that. We appreciate it, and thank you in advance.
All right, let's get into it. We are less than a week away from one of the most memorable Oscar telecasts in recent memory. The show hasn't even aired yet, and we are wondering about these weird Academy decisions, going hostless, awards given during commercials, and the chance that history might be made promises that this will be a show not to miss. But does everyone feel this way? Sean, what do you think about the ratings this year?
Yeah, it's funny because I mean, we know that both of us love the Oscar telecast, and I think no matter what I will watch, so I'm not the control subject for this. I'm going to watch no matter what, and I'm going to watch live. I think it's one of the few things that's televised that I actually watch live.
Yeah.
Maybe the only thing. You know, so guaranteed I'm going to watch again for the 50th year in a row. But
okay.
And I was a little baby, used to watch
not,
the Oscars.
No, you're not that old. Okay.
But, you know, it's interesting. I would say on one hand, you have a lot of popular movies nominated this year. We didn't need that popular category. But because you saw A Star is Born and because you saw Black Panther, does that mean you're going to watch the Oscar telecast? I'm going to go out on a limb, maybe it's not a limb, and say that even though there are a lot of popular movies, even though there's been a lot of controversy, I think people might be, and I think there might be some interest in seeing what a show the Oscar telecast might be. I don't think ratings are going to go up. I think ratings are going to kind of stay the same, if not go a little down this year. I could be wrong, but I just think that every year the ratings go down a bit and people are just doing different things with their time. I bet there are people who are going to end up streaming and watching Russian Doll instead of watching the Oscars, right? Like that couldn't have happened 5 years ago, but now it can. So I think...
Right.
I think pop culture fans like you and like our listeners, we're all going to watch.
Yeah.
But I think unless something big happens, people start tweeting about that big thing that happens and then that draws people to the telecast, it'll be interesting to see.
I agree. I think that sometimes having a host helps bring those eyeballs and having, you know, big celebrities in films that are super popular adds to that, but this year there's only a little bit of that and we have no host, so it's an uphill battle for sure, and I think it'll be interesting. I think it's going to be, and I think there's also like this inherent thought about the Oscars being long and drawn out and people don't care about some awards, and I think, again, like you had said, you know, people have other options, Netflix, Hulu, whatever, go out for a drink. Like, they may prioritize doing something else at their time.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what the ratings are. But listen, I'm excited for some surprises, for some snubs, for some gaffes. Bring it all on and make it 8 hours. I will be at home on my couch in my kimono watching.
Okay, I mean, couch and kimono, check. 8 hours, no. Sorry.
You ain't having it. You ain't having it.
To get some sleep.
Okay, well, Amita, the best thing about the Oscars is that it gives me a chance to inside pop quiz you some Oscar history as it relates, perhaps, to what's going on this year.
Oh, here we go.
Amita did so well, ladies and gentlemen, during our last Inside Pop quiz at the beginning of this year. So I knew that she was up for maybe the next level of difficulty for this Inside Pop quiz.
Oh, no. They're going to be difficult.
Amita, you're such an awards expert. You're such a movie expert. I'm ready for you to just score a million points in this, okay?
Okay. All right. Bring it.
Okay, so question number one has to do and is inspired by Roma. Roma is considered a favorite to win the Oscar for Best Picture, which would be historic in many ways, right? It would be Netflix's streaming service's first Best Picture win.
Yes.
People are also making a big deal because it's in black and white. So there have been two black and white Best Picture winners in the past 50 years. Please get 15 points for each that you can name.
I mean, the one that I can think of more recently was The Artist.
Correct.
I want to say Grapes of Wrath, but that doesn't make sense to me. I don't know why.
I think Grapes of Wrath did win Best Picture.
But it's not in the last 50 years.
Not in the last 50 years.
Yeah, that's why it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, since 1969.
Yeah, the 80s are a blur. I don't know. I can only give you 15 points worth.
Doing too many lines in the 80s, Amita. We understand.
Yeah. Sorry, guys.
All right. Well, Amita, that was great. 15 points for The Artist. The other winner, and you could feel free to debate this if you want, Schindler's List. Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List.
Oh, duh.
All in black and white, except for that one moment with the little girl in the red coat, but black and white. So Schindler's List was the other one. One could argue that Raging Bull should have won Best Picture, but it did not, and that was in black and white. Mm. So that was good. 15 points for you for that first question. Here's for 20 points, also related to Roma and its lack of color. Can obviously, movies were all black and white up until a point when we figured out how to make colored movies. For 20 points, can you name the first color picture to win Best Picture? The first movie in color to win Best Picture?
I'm going with Gone with the Wind, but I don't know why either.
20 points for Amita Patel. I knew it. You're brilliant.
Well, this brain has a lot of stuff in it. Okay, great. Yay.
In 1939, Gone with the Wind won Best Picture.
Boop.
39 was a great year. Wizard of Oz came out that year, too. Some other great films. So, yes, Gone with
Deep
the Wind.
Competition.
Well done, Amita Patel. Well done.
Thank you.
I had to lower the octave for that last well done. You did so well.
I appreciate that.
All right. You're on a roll. For the next question, let's talk about Best Actress. Oh, wait. Before we move on to Best Actress, can I get a prediction from you? Since we were just talking about Best Picture, do you think, we know that you want Roma to win, do you think Roma will win Best Picture this year?
There's so many factors involved with why it may not, with the Netflix and its foreign language and its black and white. There is so many things that are playing against this film to win Best Picture, but I still think it is the best picture. So I want the momentum of all of the awards campaigning to work in its favor, and I hope it does win. And I still think it will. I do. I really believe in this film. I do. And I also don't think that any of the other ones should.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, how much do we love when Amita throws shade? It's a rare occasion, so you've got to just really enjoy it and wrap yourself up in it when it happens.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Okay. All right, let's move on to Best Actress, a very interesting category. I love this category, and I am going to have to stay up until 1 a.m. to see it because it's one of the last categories announced. A lot of people think that it's really between Glenn Close and Lady Gaga. And for those who have been following the Oscar season, we know that Lady Gaga and Glenn Close tied at the Critics' Choice Awards. Yeah. Amita Patel, there has been a time in Oscar history where there was actually a tie for Best Actress. Okay, so if you can name the two actresses who tied, then you'll get 20 points.
This is one of those times where I'm just going to start talking while I think, so there's no silence on the podcast. Can I get a hint of the year?
Yes, the year, it was 50 years ago. It was 1969.
Okay. I am completely unsure.
I can give you another hint. And like what might happen with Glenn Close and Lady Gaga, the two women who won, one was an absolute newcomer, and one was a grand dame who had already been nominated many times and had won, I think, the previous year, but she's won many times. And she was, so it was a similar Lady Gaga. I almost slipped and said the winner, Lady Gaga, Glenn Close situation in 1969.
I'm trying to like visualize two women holding Oscars at the same time to see if that would jog my brain, but nothing is coming up. I'm blank. I would say maybe Elizabeth Taylor and someone.
No, sorry. Okay. And don't try to visualize, because one of them wasn't there at the telecast. So you'll only you've never seen the pictures of the two of them standing next to each other holding Oscars.
Yeah, it'd be another guess. I do not know this one at all.
Okay, so the really interesting answer, Barbara Streisand.
Oh.
I think it was her first film role, one for Funny Girl.
Oh, yeah.
In so many ways, Lady Gaga is, people might attack me for saying this, but is the Barbara Streisand of, I mean, she can act, she can sing, not conventionally beautiful, but yeah. So Barbara Streisand, Funny Girl, tied with Katharine Hepburn, who won for The Lion in Winter. And I think the previous year she won for Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. So newbie, veteran, tied.
Ah, Katharine Hepburn had crossed my mind, but wow, cool.
She's legendary.
Yes.
Amita Patel, who do you think is going to win Best Actress? Really, do you agree? One of the most interesting categories this year?
Yes, definitely one of the most interesting categories. And I still think, hands down, it'll go to Glenn Close. I think the Oscars are not ready to give this award to Lady Gaga. And I think that everyone knows it's a shoo-in for her to get Best Song. So I feel like it's Glenn Close's time. And she was fantastic in The Wife.
And who do you want to win?
Who do I want to win? I don't know.
You have no emotional stake in it.
Honestly? Oh, no, I do. Olivia Colman, the favorite. Because I discussed her performance in our Best of Movies. I would say Olivia Colman is who I would want to win.
Got it. All right, Amita, I have your final question, but it's multi-part. It's a very dramatic final question in our Oscar-themed Inside Pop Quiz. All right, so we briefly mentioned it earlier. The Oscars were going to do some ridiculous shenanigans where they had a separate category of popular films, which was the dumbest thing I've ever heard of.
Ugh. But, if you could hear my eye rolls. Okay.
So a lot of the films that are nominated for Best Picture and considered the best movies of the year have also been seen by the most people. Amita, there are 8 nominees. I'm taking out Roma because Netflix doesn't announce box office tallies or ratings. So Roma's gone. So we've got 7 Best Picture nominees to consider. For 5 points each, I want you to name these Oscar nominees, highest box office to lowest box office, and 5 points for every time you get the right order. Okay?
Okay. Number 1,
mm-hmm.
Black Panther.
5 points.
A duh.
A duh.
Number two is probably the trickiest one. I'm going to go.
It's the trickiest one.
I'm going to actually say, because I've been talking, somebody else was telling me the numbers for this film were kind of crazy. Number two, I think, is Bohemian Rhapsody.
Ding, ding, ding. You are correct. Yeah. The latest figures I have, Bohemian Rhapsody has raked in $210 million.
Yeah. Number three, also tricky. I'm going to go with my gut and say Star is Born.
Amita Patel is killing it. A Star is Born on the heels of Bohemian Rhapsody with $208 million. I think I'm talking domestically. Yeah. So wait, that's yeah. another 5 points.
I love that you're taking all this down. I think number four is...
Four should not be hard.
I'm thinking Green Book.
Girl, you're killing it. Okay. Green Book. Green Book has so far made about $61 million.
Okay. All right.
And it's made you 5 points.
Yes, it does. Give me that five. Okay, these next few are going to be tricky. I think between BlacKkKlansman and Vice, one of them is the next one. And I think I want to go with BlacKkKlansman only because Vice has not been out that long.
You're correct.
Ah! Yay.
Another 5 points. Then this Vice. Should be a cakewalk for you next. Yes.
Yeah. Vice. Then Vice, mm-hmm. and then The Favorite.
And then The Favorite. Listen, Vice has made $45 million, and then The Favorite, $30 million.
Oh,
not shabby.
Wait, I thought you were gonna totally. Oh yeah. It's gonna be the opposite.
Flip it. No. You got that all right.
Oh snap! My brain still works.
Does any of this surprise you?
No. I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody a little bit. I think everybody was a little surprised at how well Bohemian Rhapsody did at theaters. But it's like, you know, it's such an iconic band. I think that people were, no matter what, curious and wanting to see something to relive their music. And so as much as we have our thoughts about the quality of this film, I understand why people, you know, ran to the box office to see it.
All right, Amita, I just need you to entertain the viewers for a moment while I add up your score.
Well, I was going to entertain the viewers by asking you a question because you didn't give any predictions. So I was going to ask what your best picture prediction was.
I'm doing math.
I'm so sorry.
I'm ready. Okay. All right. My best picture prediction?
Yes.
Listen, I don't think you can be an Academy voter and not be influenced by this onslaught of Roma. So I think there are probably a good chunk of Academy voters who have not seen Roma, but have seen all the love for Roma and are just going to check that Roma box. They're going to feel good about themselves for voting for something arty and black and white and foreign language and from Mexico, especially all those, you know, liberal Academy voters out there making a statement. And I think there are probably going to be a bunch of people who turned on their screener or turned on Netflix and just watched the first 10 minutes of Roma. And they're like, yep, beautifully shot, compelling, done. Right. They haven't even watched the whole. So I think it's going to be Roma. I think it's going to be Roma.
Well, it's just hard for us not to agree sometimes. And I'm really glad you agree.
I've decided I really want it to be If Beale Street Could Talk, because I went to see it again 2 nights ago, and I was
so
even more of a mess. Like I, the movie ended, the credits rolled, and I was in the bathroom, and I turned to my partner, and I started to like say something. I started crying in the men's bathroom at the Nighthawk in Park Slope, that movie really, I just think it's so powerful and so restrained. And I think that's it. Like, it's so restrained that you're restrained. And then I think what happened to me was after 2 hours of restraint, like I needed to let go. But just so beautiful, so well made, just like that's filmmaking. And listen, I hope it wins Best Adapted Screenplay. I hope Regina King wins Best Actress. Please let that happen.
Yes, please. Yes, please to both of those. I think if it was on the list of those Best Pictures nominees, I would heavily try to lobby for people to watch it and get it up on the list of people who are actually voting, because it's such a beautiful film.
Thank you for agreeing with me.
You're welcome.
Well, Amita, it's been a pleasure seeing you score maybe you've set another record, 70 points in our Inside Pop quiz.
Okay.
Well done. I hope you guys were playing along, and I hope you did as well, if not better, than Amita.
Okay, thanks for rooting against me right there. I don't know why I said
that. I'm sorry. And listen, I hope you guys watch the Oscars with us. I'm sure we're going to live tweet. Someday, Amita and I will actually watch the show physically together. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. But...
nope, not this year. Sorry.
Not this year.
Okay, we'll be back to discuss the culture of apology in pop culture after this very short message.
Greetings, I am Plek Dexsetter, contacting you from the Zik Squadron, which is frankly sort of crappy, but I'm here on a heroic mission with my trusty crew, C-53.
Heroic feels like an exaggeration.
Okay, sure. And Security Officer Dar.
Plek, don't put me in your stupid recording.
Well, and we're all traveling aboard our trusty starship, the Bargerian Jade. Bargy.
What? Sorry. I'm awake. I was just flying while asleep.
Hey there, this is Alden Ford. I play Plek, and we are so excited to announce that our podcast, Mission to Zix, is now part of the Maximum Fun Network. Our third season launches on Max Fun on March 20th. Binge seasons 1 and 2 right now. That's Mission to Zix, ZYXX.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
So, from Kevin Hart to Aziz Ansari to Offset to Megyn Kelly, first time those two have ever been mentioned in the same sentence, it seems like every day... there is a public figure apologizing for something. So, Amita, shall we talk about what seems to me, and I think to you, that there's like this weird trend of celebrity apologizing. But I think it's worth asking and questioning, who are these celebrities actually apologizing to? Are they apologizing to us, the fans? Do we deserve or need an apology? I think there are a lot of interesting questions that come up when... these people are either via Instagram or little video messages apologizing for something that they've done or been accused of doing. So I really, really, really want to hear your thoughts, I think, on what most recently is in the news, which is Aziz Ansari addressing his sexual misconduct allegations in a recent stand-up set. So I'd really love to hear what your thoughts are on that. And we should just say also that we're recording this episode on February 14th. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
So there's a chance that stuff may happen between now and when our show goes live. So just keep in mind that this is recorded on the 14th. So what are your thoughts on Aziz Ansari and what he said during his stand-up?
I will say I thought he was genuine in what he said. I do think that it came maybe a little later than people may have wanted because this happened almost a year ago. Mm-hmm. But it's a tricky one because he was accused, and that was more in a slew of men who were accused of sexual harassment or sexual violence. And I think that the claim that the woman said against him, I mean, I don't want to go into the details of everything, but like, it's just the claim that she had put out there, a lot of people didn't feel like was, I don't know. It didn't feel very solid. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the way to say it. Mm-hmm. And I hate to take away from her experience at all, obviously as a woman, but it was just, it felt odd to everybody. It left a weird taste in everybody's mouth. And so I think his lack of response, he did a little response, but I think his lack of response may have made it kind of just like die away. So him saying something now after giving it thought, after trying to look internally or whatever he needed to do, I think comes off a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to, you know, what we were talking about as a whole of like celebrities feeling that they need to apologize and always, you know, and is it too much and do they need to? I think it's tricky. Like, I think it's just more of like a current state of affairs in the world we're living in where we are inundated with news and fake news and social media and constant stream of content in any shape or form, right? We have Twitter, we have Instagram. People are videotaping everything all the time, you know? And so it's one of those things where, because we are in this constant feed from wherever it's from, I think the public relations of all of these figures who in news or in movies or in music, whichever one it is, I think that they feel the responsibility to kind of get ahead or respond, because their reputations could suffer even greater because of the world we're in right now. And that's where it becomes tricky, because then it feels like you're just doing it to get over this, instead of you're doing this because you actually feel sorry.
Yeah, great point. Great point. And I think to that point, because there's so many outlets for celebrities to make mistakes or say the wrong things, that's also, I think, why we have so many apologies, because, you know, you take a picture with an insensitive caption and put it on Instagram. Oops, right? You mm-hmm. tweet something that you wish you hadn't. You try to delete it, but someone screenshot it. Oops, right? So I think that there's just more outlets for celebrities to make boneheaded comments and statements. And I think mm-hmm. in the case of Aziz Ansari, which it wasn't a statement, but it was an action that he was accused of. And it's interesting because, yeah, his absence, as you mentioned, seemed odd, because just like exactly what you said, it seems like there's this race to kind of get ahead of it and play defense. And he didn't do that, which I actually really respect. I believe his sincerity in terms of he wanted to kind of reflect on it, be thoughtful, also be smart about it. Are there legal actions? Is there some kind of settlement that we don't know about? And so I think it was smart for him not to do that. And it's interesting, the one thing about Aziz, I think that you and I both we both definitely want to believe women who are brave enough to come out publicly and talk about some horrible things that have happened to them, right? It happens, but I think it's incredibly rare for a woman to kind of bare her soul and make herself vulnerable to talk about, you know, some type of sexual trauma. The Aziz case is very, it's different from Louis C.K., right? It's different from Harvey Weinstein. It's different from Kevin Spacey, because it seems to be more about nuance, as far as we can tell. And it's interesting. The thing that's interesting to me is that there's something that Aziz is quoted as saying in his stand-up, which normally would piss me off, but in this case, I kind of get it. He's talking about it, and he says, "There were times I felt really upset and humiliated and embarrassed, and ultimately I just felt terrible. This person felt this way." Normally I would say, screw you. Do never say, "I'm sorry you feel this way," because that's basically saying you're wrong.
Yes.
But I kind of get what he's saying. If there was a sexual encounter,
yes,
and he thought it went one way and she thought it went another, and it's a little bit more nuanced and not blatant,
yes,
then I am sorry you felt this way.
Yeah, and I will tell you, the girls that I were talking to, my friends and other people I talked to when this had just come out, we were all saying the same thing. We're like, well, this doesn't sound that much different than a date that I may have had.
Mm.
But I didn't feel harassed on that date.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? I didn't feel like I was pushed beyond my level of comfortability. And that's the thing where it's just like, if you read her encounter with him, you're like, well, maybe we should speak up more. Like, maybe this is a learning moment
yeah.
to say, you know what? Maybe we should, like, you know, we all as women should be smarter to speak up more and, like, be a little bit more forceful when we're not comfortable with something, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But there were definitely actions that I think both of them made to continue that evening. And I don't think that there was a need to apologize, because she felt a certain way and he felt a certain way.
So it's interesting. I would put this in the category of apology, but it's more nuanced, I think, than maybe the other things that we're going to talk about. And I think that's interesting. I think Aziz Ansari is capable of that. But someone like Kevin Hart, for example, I think he has a big fail in terms of a direct apology and also the nuance of apology. I think he wanted to not fully apologize the way Aziz Ansari hasn't fully apologized, but I think he did not do it in a nuanced way. I think that.
With Kevin Hart, I feel like the mistake he made is like, I already apologized for this a while ago. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, but if you already did, then just do it again. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I understand this is another thing where this is a whole other sort of topic, but the people's past and past aggressions or just past actions have been coming up to the surface, and something you may have said or did 15, 20 years ago, and you may have apologized for it, or you have grown from that, mm-hmm. is coming up to bite you now.
Yep.
And that is what happened in Kevin Hart's case. That's what's happening in a lot of people's cases. People's old tweets are coming up, and everyone's like, well, you said this back then. And if he apologized for it before, I think that there has to be some forgiveness, right? But because of social media and the things that are still out there, people don't remember maybe that somebody may have apologized or moved forward or have acted in a way as such that they do not believe those things they may have said when they were younger. Mm-hmm. But it's just one of those things where everyone still wants the clear apology. They want to make sure that the person that is getting all the fame and the fortune and that they admire or they don't is feeling remorse in some way or something like that. It's so interesting right now. There's so many cases of this right now that it's like you said, it's too many. And it's just like, but where do we draw a line?
Yeah. And I think you put your finger on it when you said, we don't want to just hear the words, but we want to believe that they feel actual remorse. Right, it's because mm-hmm. words we hear and see words all the time, and there is definitely defensiveness constantly from Kevin Hart, but there never seemed to be remorse. Because also, I think there were some articles written about people did dig, and they actually never did find an apology where he said, "I'm sorry for making this joke." Right, like so. Mm-hmm. So he actually said he apologized when he didn't, that we can find. But there never seemed to be remorse. There seemed to be, and actually it's interesting, maybe there's a difference between regret and remorse. You know, I regret that. I think Aziz Ansari conveyed remorse that even though he wasn't aware of it, that situation happened, this woman felt this way. Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel sorry that she felt this way. I feel like Kevin Hart was not serving remorse. He regrets that the situation is what it is. But I don't think and I don't know if he fully understands. But does it matter, Amita? In this case, does Kevin Hart's effed up non-apology matter? Because he had the number one movie the following week, The Upside. It seems like, for the present, his career has not been tarnished. Fine, he's not hosting the Oscars, but he probably made $20 million in the month of January. So in this case, does the lack of apology actually have any effect?
I think it affected him because he lost this platform mm-hmm. and this job that is a honored, you know, job that comedians and sometimes actors and actresses get. And it's one of those things where, like, this is an honor to get that as a performer, and you lost it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes, I think, his pride and his ego took precedence over maybe a longer term success, you know, even though he does have the number one movie and he's still successful, like, who knows what it could have done for him if he actually hosted.
That's a good point. I know someone who also thinks that it might seem like he's still riding high now, but that there may be some long-term ramifications. Maybe there's mm-hmm. you know, a studio head who doesn't want to greenlight his next project. Maybe there's a director who doesn't want to work with him. So it'll be interesting to see if there are any long-term ramifications. But and I'll make this quick because I've got a soapbox to stand on. But I think almost the opposite to me of the Kevin Hart situation, and it's on my mind because of the worst Super Bowl in the history of life that we just experienced. Janet Jackson. I think that's a case where, in my opinion, she didn't owe anyone an apology, but she apologized, but was still punished years and years and years later.
Yes, that is a very good example of, again, this thing where you feel like everyone around you, the people, the fans, the, you know, record executives in her case, or the network executives, all pressure her to say something. And it was just almost like an immediate thing in order to, I don't really know, like in order to just calm down the public.
I mean, I think it was like, I think in this case, it was apology as punishment, right? It's like Cersei Lannister walking the walk of shame.
Shame.
I mean, it's punish. Let's punish this woman for being sexual, right? Let's punish this woman for pushing the envelope. Let's punish this black woman for showing her black nipple on this quote unquote wholesome TV event. Super Bowl's not wholesome. Football's not a wholesome event.
Not at all.
Only on Friday Night Lights. It's wholesome then, but otherwise it's not a wholesome sport. And then like there's, you know, the stories about how Les Moonves was like decided that he was going to punish her and ruin her career. And for a while he succeeded. But I think, you know, that's a weird case where her apology wasn't enough, right? Like it's like her career started to decline and it became a joke. And I think only because of, and I'm not objective, her sheer talent and everything that she had done before and the fact that she just kept at it and kept releasing albums and kept proving that she isn't just a punchline and that she's beyond the Super Bowl. I think she you know, inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year. I think she's rising above that. And that Super Bowl thing is not going to be the first or second or third line in her bio. It'll be in there, but but I think that's a case where the apology wasn't enough for some reason for many people, and it took decades to repair.
Yeah.
You know who should apologize?
It's unfortunate.
You know who should apologize?
Who?
Adam Levine for showing both of those nipples. And why should he apologize? I'm not even body shaming right now. Because it was the most desperate attempt. I think he knew how incredibly boring that performance was. And so I'm sure like he did some extra crunches and push-ups like 2 weeks leading up to that. I almost said something else which could get us sued, so I'm not going to say that about what else he might have done to enhance his body.
Ooh.
Which looked weird to me, but no body shaming. But I say he should apologize for showing his nipples in a desperate attempt to try to liven up a lackluster performance. I said it.
No comment. I mean, he didn't need, you know, sure, take off your shirt,
but
I'll take it. But you're right. It was unnecessary.
I won't take it because I don't know. It was so desperate to me that it wasn't even sexy. Like, I feel like he was sexy 10 years ago when he took off his shirt, but did seem desperate to me. And desperation equals boner killer.
Yeah. Killed the lady boner.
All right. I just want to end by talking about a personal experience that I had for Inside Pop. So there was an episode that we did, gosh, last year, and we were talking about an episode of Queer Eye, and we were talking about a trans person who was helped by the Queer Eyes. And I think for most of the interview, both of us were using the correct pronoun, and then there was an occasion or two where I messed up and I used the wrong pronoun. As we were recording the episode, neither of us caught it. As we edited the episode, neither of us caught it. As we posted the episode, neither of us caught it. But a listener who I think was a fan of our show listened and left a comment on our Facebook page talking about how I effed up and I used the wrong pronoun. And so, like for me, that's like a little taste of what some of these celebrities go through.
Tiny, yes.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I responded right away, and I tried to give a thoughtful response. And I believe I used the phrase, I'm sorry. I hope I did after talking about all that sorry stuff. But mm-hmm. but I think in the apology, yeah, I don't think I just tried to explain it away. I did try to explain that we made every effort to be correct in our pronoun usage. And I really did regret using the wrong one. And but that was a case where, oh, yeah, I get it. Like, you do have to publicly apologize sometimes if you have a public platform and you mess up in one way or another.
Yeah, you do. It's just I just feel like there's so much happening right now. There's a lot of scrutiny on many levels on you know, podcasts to TV shows to movies to music, you know, to news. It just gets to a place where it feels not genuine and might be watered down. And that's where I think that's the tricky place we're in right now.
Agreed, agreed. So we would definitely love to hear what our listeners think. So please tweet us at Pop Insiders and let us know, you know, what you think about this apology trend and when you think apologies are necessary and when you don't need them, when they don't work for you. We'd really love to hear your opinion. So please, please, please reach out to us.
And we'll have the big sell after this short message.
Hey, it's Janet Varney of the JV Club podcast, and I am so excited to be joining Maximum Fun. If you're not yet familiar with the JV Club, it's a podcast with me and some of my favorite women, and in the summer, men, as we explore the highs and lows of our terrible teenage years into our adult lessons. For example, hear about Allison Brie's humiliating moment at a gymnastics competition. Experience the shame of a knocked out tooth with Jamila Jamil, or drop in as John Hamm imagines what would happen if Bambi met Godzilla. So join me and all my once awkward, often still awkward friends every Thursday by subscribing to the JV Club on MaximumFun.org.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It is now time for The Big Sell. It's our favorite final segment in which we take turns every episode recommending something from the world of pop culture we are living for. And we recommend that to the other and hope that they also live for it. Last week, I big sold Bao, a nominee for Best Animated Short in the Academy Awards. It's hard to say. To Amita. Amita, what did you think of that nomination? And Big Sell.
Well, I think the nomination was appropriate. Okay. I believe you have possibly ruined any type of Bao sandwiches for me for a while. It's a Pixar animated short, and there was one that was done a couple years ago that we also discussed. It was called Piper. And I loved it. And I love these animated shorts. This one, it was so interesting because it essentially was that the bow that this elderly Chinese woman made was essentially transformed into a baby. And I was like, what is happening? You said it. You told me it was weird and subversive. Mm-hmm. And it was also slightly adorable. But right. I don't know how I'm going to eat dumplings in the future. But I admire how Pixar really tries to put a message within a cute little short that may seem like this little dumpling is a child, you know, on a soccer field or at the grocery store in a baby Bjorn. Like, it is so odd. But at the end, it really comes together as a really sweet and moving metaphor, you know, for becoming old and your child leaving the house and having that connection with your child and making sure that you continue to, you know, share that love with each other and not become distant. And It was extremely sweet towards the end, but at the very beginning, I was like, what is happening?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Equal parts adorable and disturbing, which is kind of fascinating. So what I'm very curious. I feel like I want to influence your rating because I feel a low one coming on. But don't forget, look at all that diversity, Amita. Asian stars of this animated film, the culture,
yeah, no,
the
no,
food.
No. Okay.
No, what is your no influence? It's, what is your big
influence? I would give it a solid 3 stars because one, I also was just always wowed by the advancement of animation. Animation wise, it is really great. It was vibrant and, you know, the detail was really cool, but the disturbingness of it made me give it a 3 because I was still very much like, I need like a month before I can eat a dumpling again.
if you want to be as disturbed as Amita Patel, you can, we'll just throw it in our show notes again, since we're talking about it so much. So you can see what she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Dumpling party.
Oh, no.
All right. What do you have for me this week?
I have been in a weird music place where I've just trying to listen to a couple of albums and just, you know, not really finding something that I'm obsessed with right now this time of year. And at the end of the year, we do our best music list. And I was also looking into just like best lists from other sources and just trying to get a gauge of just music right now. And so at the beginning of the year, I started listening to NPR's top 50 albums of the year. And it's a Spotify playlist. And I have listened to a lot of different genres of music through it over the last couple months, which has been really interesting and fun and cool for the most part. Some of them were like, okay. And it was great because a lot of them were actually some of the major nominees for the Grammys, which just happened recently. And so I was definitely more well in tuned to these nominations because I knew, you know, Brandi Carlile's album, which is great, and Kacey Musgraves' album, which was wonderful as well. So it was really great to get that. And what I really loved is like some of the artists that I discovered through their top 50 album playlist. And one of them I was really excited to share with you in this big cell. This band is called, and I hope I pronounced this right, Kruongbin. And it is really interesting because you think that, oh, wow, Kruongbin, that must be like some foreign, you know, band from Asia or something. It is not. Kruongbin, and I'm taking this description, which I love, from Bandcamp, actually. Kruongbin is a 3-piece band from Texas. And it is a female bass player, Laura Lee, Mark Spear on guitar, and Donald Johnson on drums. They take their influence from 1960s Thai funk. And the name of the band literally translates to engine fly in Thai. And the band is steeped in bass-heavy psychedelic sound of their inspiration, which, according to Bandcamp, is Tarantino soundtracks and surf rock cool. Which is a great way to describe their sound. And I was just obsessed with one of the tracks called Maria Tambien. Mm-hmm. There is very minimal vocals. It is a really cool, more instrumental type of sound. And I swear to you, it just like, as soon as it started in the playlist, I was like, what is this? It just gave me this different vibe and energy and like trance kind of feeling. But like, I don't know what it was, but I was just supremely attracted to it and really enjoyed it. So I was like, I've got to make this my next big sell. And then throughout further research, I already am like a little more obsessed with the coolness of this band. I went to their website and their website doesn't have much on it, but it does do this one thing. As soon as you get to the landing page, it says you can book a Spotify playlist curated by the band for any trip around the world. You enter 2 different airport codes, and then there's a button to say, let's fly. And so for fun, I just put in JFK to Bombay, Mumbai, India, right? And so you put it in and it says, and then you get to make these choices. Do you want to stay in the window or the aisle? Then you choose, do you want coffee for an upbeat high energy flight, or do you want tea for a flight spent wrapped in a blanket? You know, and you choose all these things, first class, cattle class, direct flight, multi-stop. And then they give you, then you save this curated playlist to your Spotify. And I think it's so cool. I'm going to do it. I just went through the process so you guys understand what they're doing. But I'm going to listen to that playlist as well because I think it's really interesting and cool and a fun little feature that this band's website puts together.
Cool. It's musical Bandersnatch. That's really cool. I'm so fascinated. Already, it's a band I want to see live. It sounds like it really would be really fun.
It'd be super cool.
And you know how I feel about female bass players, Michelle and Deggio Cello.
I know.
I'm ready. I'm so excited. So what are you? What are you big selling to me? It's a multimedia experience.
I gave you a few things. I am selling you their album, which is called Con Todo el Mundo.
Love it.
Yeah.
I'm all about that. I can't wait. I think I will probably end up going to the website and doing the playlist and all that fun stuff as well. So thank you for that amazing big sell. Or is it amazing? Time will tell. You have to tune in 2 weeks to see what I think about all this. Well, that's it, Amita. That is all she wrote for this week's episode of Inside Pop. But, dear listener, have no fear, because you can and you will stay in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. We really want to hear from you about all the stuff we talked about and also just what your pop culture life is like in general at any given point during the week. You can also like us on Facebook and visit our official site at InsidePopPodcast.com.
You can also find us on the wonderful podcast network at MaximumFun.org. It's a podcast network dedicated to all different types of shows, comedy, culture, scripted, non-scripted, really, really fun podcasts. Check them out and subscribe to our podcast there as well.
And we'd like to give a special shout out to Esther Cepeda, who tweeted about how much she enjoyed Amita's interview with the production designer, Warren Allen Young. That amazing interview was in our last episode, so definitely check that out. He is the production designer of the first two seasons of Fargo, also of Strange Angel, a lot of interesting films as well. So really interesting look into the process of designing, of making these shows and movies beautiful and interesting. So thank you, Esther, for your love, and please keep listening.
Until next time. Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Way to go with the Oscar winner Casablanca.
From 1943 or 4, perhaps? Yeah.
See, you're good with the years. I am not.
Oh, well, I looked it up.
Oh, okay. Play it again, Sean.
Oh, well done, Amita.